All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. All right, Jason Ditz is on the line. He's our news director, dude, something or other, managing news guy at antiwar.com. News.antiwar.com. Welcome back, Jason. How's it going?
Oh, not too bad, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Man, this top headline is making me mad. Gates, Libya war not a vital U.S. interest. So does that mean that he's only got us into this thing out of the goodness of his heart?
Well, his answer was a little longer than that, and it was...
Was it Israel's interest he's trying to protect here, or what?
Well, indirectly. His argument was, well, if Libya gets too bad, all the refugees will flock to Egypt, and that might destabilize Egypt, which I guess... implied within that is that would be bad for Israel. So yeah, Israel's in there.
Well, there you go. So the question then I think is begged, is Israel a vital U.S. interest? But I guess nobody asked him the follow-up, right?
No, there was definitely no follow-up. The fact that he was even willing to admit that he just got done starting a war that's not a vital U.S. interest was sort of a staggering admission in and of itself, though.
Yeah.
Usually the sort of thing they keep to themselves until they write their memoirs.
Yeah. Well, that's something that I've really noticed about, maybe the Bush crew really started it, but the Obama team really has to have such a shamelessness to outright admit some of the things that they outright admit, you know, that you would think that they would know they're supposed to keep under their breath or say backstage to each other and laugh or whatever, but they just come right out and say it to us.
Yeah, there seems to be a disconnect there where they don't realize the stuff they ought to be ashamed of. Where it's like, oh, yeah, we started a war, no congressional debate, we waited until Congress was in recess, launched this war that's not a vital American interest.
Yep. And here's the punchline, everybody, especially you Obama voters out there, who perhaps, I don't know, took it to heart when he announced that, hey, our intervention here will be a matter of days, not weeks. We're running a headline here from the New York Times at antiwar.com. Gates and Clinton unite to say Libya intervention may last a while.
Yeah, and their a while that they said on the Sunday news shows was a matter of months, which... is even that is kind of underselling it, because Secretary Gates just a few days ago was saying, well, that UN resolution doesn't have any sort of end date, so neither does the war. As far as he's concerned, this is just an open-ended conflict again, and officials have been pretty unanimous in saying, well, we don't have any sort of endgame strategy here. This is just a war that's going to be going on.
Amazing. Now, tell me this, you know, I guess if we're trying to figure out, you know, predicting and trying not to predict the worst here, but maybe that's all we have, it seems like our choices for the end here are either, you know, figure out a way to get Gaddafi to actually, you know, give up autonomy to the East, something like that, or failing that, do you think it's possible that with American air cover, the rebels will be able to just take Tripoli and hunt this guy down and get rid of him themselves, therefore hopefully avoiding the quote-unquote necessity of sending in the Marines like Thomas Jefferson?
Well, it seems to be what they're hoping, but it's really hard to say. And, of course, this resolution was never meant to be... international backing for just propping up a rebel offensive across the entire nation anyway, but that's what it's being used for now.
Yeah.
But whether or not they can actually pull it off really remains to be seen.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, I don't hate to say it, but it really, at this point, it's pretty clear the UN resolution doesn't mean anything, you know, even if they had gone to Congress, whatever. The UN's not legit, and besides that, you know, the Security Council declaring war, that's not legitimate. It shouldn't be to anyone, I don't think. But besides that, no war lasts past the first mandate. You know, that's like a cliche, right? That the first casualty is truth, and then the second one is the battle plan. You know, everything right. changes immediately when you go to war.
Right, and I'm sure the reason for this war is going to shift several times. There's already a lot of preliminary reports leaking out about Al-Qaeda being key parts in the rebels, Al-Qaeda infiltration of the rebel movement, so it's entirely possible, even if they do oust Gaddafi, that it'll just be a prelude to another war against the Al-Qaeda-backed rebels.
You know, it's funny because it was just, what, a couple weeks ago we talked on this show about that's why not to do this. You know, there are a lot of Libyans that went to fight in Iraq on the side of the Iraqis, you know.
Right, and whether the Al-Qaeda infiltration of the rebels is true or not, I mean, I guess we can't really say that for sure right now. It's an excuse, and it's out there, and in the era when wars are just an end unto themselves, it's an excuse to keep one going, as we've seen in Afghanistan pretty much forever.
Right. That's how we switched sides back to Gaddafi in the first place. Where, if you look, the MI6 and SAS, they were trying to use the jihadist types to kill Gaddafi as late as 1998. Then with the terror war, they decide they prefer a secular fascist with mirrored sunglasses to some guy in a turban with an ideology. And so they started backing him up. And, you know, from what I read, I should throw in here, from what I've read about these accusations about Al-Qaeda there, these guys are veterans of the Afghan and Iraq war, apparently, some of them. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, they're all about suicide attacks or that they're all about attacking Americans or share any of the, you know, real ideology of Al-Qaeda in Pakistan, if such a thing even still exists anymore, or of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. I mean, we don't know exactly who these guys are. But, you know, this is one of the reasons why we said not to invade Iraq, too. It's one of the reasons that our puppet dictator, Hosni Mubarak in Egypt, said not to invade Iraq. You're going to create 10,000 bin Ladens. You're going to... How many people are going to go to fight in the Iraq insurgency, just like they went to fight in the Afghan insurgency in the 80s, and then go home again, and then be people that, you know, either we or somebody else has to deal with later, and as you say, serve as a ready excuse for further intervention in the war. Well, we helped the rebels, but we can't let these of the rebels win. Now we have to intervene further and make sure that the right guys come out on top and have a good progressive 21st century democracy for the people of Libya there. That should only take a couple of decades.
Right. There really is no endgame strategy, and I guess their ideal victory condition is just for democracy to magically appear somehow, which is just silly, because even in Iraq, where, you know, it was a fairly cosmopolitan society, and democracy could well have emerged in the wake of Saddam Hussein in the first place, it really just didn't happen. In under a massive military occupation, it's tough to establish a new democracy, and it's going to be just as tough with constant airstrikes and a no-fly zone.
Well, and you know, Libya is a big place, and a lot of it's the Sahara Desert, and it seems to me that, I don't know, man. I don't see Gaddafi coming to a table and signing a piece of paper like Milosevic here, and, you know, the way he finally granted autonomy to Kosovo, something like that. I mean, this is going to be another Iraq-style long-term thing here. I can't see a way out of it from here, not the way these Democrats have got us in now. And I was wondering if you could update us a little bit, Jason, on, from what you can tell by the news reports here, what's going on in Libya, how much better the rebels are doing now that the Americans have taken over the air war for them.
Well, they've retaken a couple of very key port cities, but it seems like the Gaddafi forces are still stalling their offensive when they get into the western part of the country, when they get into the sort of home territory of the regime. It becomes a lot more difficult going.
And now, what about the factions? I guess I heard that a couple of... Gaddafi loyal army types had moved over to the rebel side late last week. Has there been anything more like that?
I haven't heard anything new on that. Exactly how many of the Gaddafi military are even still on his side. I guess we don't really know. I know he brought quite a few mercenaries in to fight on his side early on when the first defections started happening.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like if you got just an army of mercenaries, I guess it depends on how much you're paying them, but, you know, with typical soldiers, you inculcate them into God and country and duty and loyalty and all those other ideals, too, to keep them doing your bidding. You know what I mean? Whereas a mercenary is just a mercenary, man. He can get a plane ticket.
Right, and of the reports I saw, I mean, they were never confirmed, but it sounded like he was paying the mercenaries pretty excessively, like to the tune of $10,000 to sign up and $1,000 a day to fight.
Well, he certainly got the stolen money to pay him with, no doubt about that.
Yeah, he definitely does. How much of it he can access, I guess we don't know, but apparently he's not too worried about being able to come up with all this money to pay all these mercenaries.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's run a pretty tight, tortured dictatorship there for a long time, a very brutal one. And I think, yeah, I don't know. I wonder what was going on in that conversation before Obama came out and said Gaddafi must go. Like, he just talked this over with Hillary Clinton and that was it, or what? I don't understand. It seems like, you know, you gotta be able to back up what you say and then now look at us, you know? And I'm kind of with Justin Armando, who he predicted that Obama's not stupid enough to do it. That was bad, but I think he, you know, along those same lines, he's got to kind of think bad of it. I mean, at the very least, this makes him look pretty bad to the American people. It's not going over very well so far. And, you know, Republicans and Democrats attacking him for doing it without permission from Congress and that kind of thing. For his own political fortunes, if only that, it seems like he would be a little bit hesitant to get himself involved in something like this. But I don't know, man. I guess he's got higher obligations than his own reelection.
Right, and I guess he's spent enough of his first term spinning the Afghanistan war to an increasingly fed-up American public that what's one more war? You know, he just has to give a few more speeches.
Right. Yeah, you know, the New York Times actually has a piece about the American people are so busy that they're not really keeping up with the Libya news. It's just, you know, one too many news stories, and they've decided that they don't really want to pay attention. And then they have a couple of quotes from some regular Americans saying things like, well, I don't know too much about it, but that we're on the side of the good guys, so I'm proud of that. I'm for that, you know. That's where you get your 47% to 43% there. But, yeah, well, it's just another TV show, right? Yeah.
Right, and not even a particularly popular one. I mean, compared to the heartwarming stories of, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq, Libya is definitely sort of the lesser story.
Yeah, well, it's too ambiguous going in, you know? Bad guys attacked us, you know, from Afghanistan, sort of, kind of, and, you know, Saddam Hussein, they called him a Hitler for, you know, 15 years leading up to that thing almost, you know what I mean? So, I mean, he was a bad guy too, but not a threat, obviously, but I think, yeah, with this one, even with Gaddafi, I mean, people have hated Gaddafi for a long time, but it's been a long time since he blew up the Pan Am flight and all that, you know? So, I don't know.
All right, the Gaddafi thing kind of comes out of left field because in the 1980s, of course, we remember all sorts of scare stories about him and what a great danger he was, but it really sort of stopped around the end of the Reagan administration, and we haven't heard tremendous amounts out of that area.
Yeah, except, you know, selling him weapons. That's
right.
What we call normalizing relations with a country. We don't just allow trade. Our government brokers arms deals with them.
Not directly, of course, because directly we still don't sell weapons to Libya, but the British do, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, the Americans helped arrange all that. General Dynamics is an American company with a UK branch.
Right.
You know, it's as translucent as wax paper. We can see right through it, sort of. All right. So, well, let's change gears then a little bit. And can you give us a bit of an update on the crisis in Bahrain? I know the Saudis, and I guess they're saying their allies, too, some UAE troops and who knows what, have invaded Bahrain, cleared Pearl Square last week. What's the news since then?
Really, the news has gotten amazingly quiet out of Bahrain. There's been some accusations being laid by the Bahraini government saying, oh, these protesters were all secretly in league with Hezbollah, or they were all secretly in league with Iran, and things like that. But really, the news isn't coming out anymore other than the official stories. We're not seeing, really, since the destruction of the Pearl Roundabout monument, there hasn't been a tremendous amount of news coming out about what protests are still going on, what happened to all the people that they detained, or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, there's that, is it a Times article? No, it's a McClatchy piece by Warren Strobel. Arab Spring drives wedge between U.S. and Saudi Arabia, saying that, I guess basically, well, the most notable part is that Gates and Clinton both were refused an audience with His Highness King Abdullah in the last few weeks. And apparently they're very upset that the Obama administration has issued the most tepid sort of absolutely mandatory for American politics only sort of criticisms of their action in Bahrain, but that they're so determined to thwart the Iranian conspiracy there or whatever that this is really driving a wedge between the Americans and the Saudis. I wonder.
Well, it's hard to say, and even the stories about a wedge could well be stories designed for American consumption, so that we say, well, we're not involved in what the Saudis are doing in Bahrain.
Right. Yeah, they're mad at us for criticizing them. Yeah, I mean, hell, how do we know that he rebuffed their visits other than some anonymous source told some establishment journalist lackey, you know?
I mean, Secretary Gates visited Bahrain right before the invasion started, and his post-secret talk press conference was about how he thought there should be a dialogue, and certainly there's been no dialogue, but beyond that, we don't know what went on behind closed doors or whether the U.S. had any inkling that this, officially they say they didn't hear anything about the Saudi invasion until the Saudis called them up and said troops are on the way. So they say there was no American consultation, but whether that's true or not, I guess we don't really know.
Yeah. And you know what? Actually, I was still confused and thinking it was a Times or a Post piece. It was Warren Strobel and McClatchy, and that guy's a real journalist, but I guess we'll see, you know? I mean, yours spins much more likely than his, honestly, but it's worthy of note, you know? And after all, like, who's zooming who in the Saudi-American relationship anyway? You know what I mean? It's we need them to keep buying our debt, selling their oil and all this. Maybe it's kind of an Israel situation where the satellite gets to dictate to the boss man. All right, so I guess let's talk about Yemen a little bit. Huge protest there last week, over the weekend. Some people killed. I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, the situation in Yemen looks like it's starting to finally come to a head. It was one of the first places to really get the protests going in earnest. They started about the same time they did in Egypt. And it's been growing progressively, and there have been some violent crackdowns, particularly after the Libya crackdown started. We saw President Saleh going with more violent crackdowns, particularly in the south. But as we've seen in a lot of places, those violent crackdowns are just making people angrier. And he got to the point where last week he was asking the Saudi government to do another Bahrain with him and send troops and protect him.
And was there a response to that?
Yes, there was. The Saudi foreign ministry responded we never liked President Soleil in the first place, and we don't really care what happens to him.
Oh. All right, then. Well.
So, and now, although he's becoming, his rhetoric is becoming all the more aggressive and insisting that he's absolutely going to stay in power through 2013, he's losing control of a lot of the provinces on, well, on both ends of the country. The separatists in the north, the Houthis, have taken over the Sada province, and the Al-Jaf province has apparently fallen in the north as well. The Houthis have appointed a new governor in Sada. They've taken it over so completely.
Well, that's the capital city, right?
Isn't Sana the capital city?
I thought that's what you said. You said Sada. I'm sorry.
Yeah, one of them's Sada and one of them's Sana. I think Sana is the capital and Sada is the northern.
Right, right. I see. I'm sorry. I just misunderstood you.
But that's part of the traditional country of Yemen. I mean, southern Yemen, he's lost control of some of the southern provinces to the separatists down there as well. That used to be the old Soviet-backed South Yemen.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also losing control in the central provinces. There's been reports of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula even chasing him out of some of the towns in the central provinces. He's losing parts of the north. He's losing parts of the south. He's had so many defections in the military that he really can't claim control of the capital city anymore. So his insistence that he's going to stay in power is starting to seem very much beside the point.
Yeah.
What he plans to do, it doesn't seem like it's going to have a lot of impact on what actually happens anymore.
I mean, he already had major secessionist movements in the north and the south anyway, and then I guess he's had to call his troops fighting those battles back to the capital to try to protect him, and now they can't even do that, doesn't sound like.
Well, there have been some really ugly crackdowns on tribal protesters in both the north and the south, and in both cases, the tribes have jumped ship. He's lost the support of a lot of these tribal leaders, and they're now on the side of the protesters, although there's also still the separatist movement. So I think we really don't know where Yemen's going to end up. Is it going to end up with a sort of Egypt-style overthrow? Is it going to end up with breaking off into several different countries? We really don't know. But the one thing that I think is probably safe to say is that President Saleh's days are very much numbered.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. And doesn't sound like the country's going to stay one country after this either. All right, well, tell me this now, Jason. See if we can break it up. First of all, tell me what's going on in Syria. This is another country where the American government would very much like to see a revolution as opposed to Yemen or Bahrain. So first of all, tell me what's been going on in Syria a little bit, and then get to the politics of D.C., because I know they've been talking about it this week.
Syria's had some pretty major protests in the south along the Jordanian border. And there were some violent crackdowns on those protests. They started out, they were a few hundred people, up to 1,000. There was a violent crackdown that killed a few. That turned it from about 1,000 people to about 5,000 people. And they killed some more people, which turned it into about 30,000 people. And it's spreading increasingly over the country. And now the Assad government is talking about making reforms and ending the emergency law that's been in place for 48 years. But they're not really giving a timeline on when they're going to make those reforms or anything. And we really don't have any information about what he's planning on doing. It seems like that promise of reforms and ending emergency rule is a lot like President Mubarak's offer in Egypt shortly before he got ousted.
Yeah, well, and I guess, you know, his father, of course, had massacred, tens of thousands of people in a Muslim Brotherhood stronghold when they were rising up. But I guess we don't know whether I mean, it doesn't sound like the movement here against him is nearly that marginal. I guess it remains to be seen whether the military is that loyal to him, especially in these circumstances with what's been going on this, you know, past couple of months.
Right. Early on, it seems like the movement may have been somewhat marginal. We didn't really see the big protests we've seen in Libya or Yemen or Bahrain, but particularly as the police and security force reaction turned violent, we see a lot more people jumping on the bandwagon and seeing that there's something very much wrong with how things are going right now and demanding change.
Well, we saw that last week Robert Gates in Israel came out on the side of the Syrian revolutionaries. And I note this piece here at antiwar.com about Joe Lieberman. The link is to a Washington Times piece. He says that, well, now that Obama's intervened in Libya, the precedent's set, let's go to Syria.
He did say that, and he wasn't actually the first, he wasn't even the first Lieberman to say that, because Israeli Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman said essentially the same thing a few days ago on Friday. He said that the U.S. should be looking to, for a Libya-style solution to the Syria protests. So there's always been momentum for starting a war with Syria, and this is one more excuse for it. But right now, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says the U.S. isn't planning to start that war just yet. You know, and her
was that what she said?
Not right now. Her answer was not now, and her explanation of why was such a tortured explanation that it's like, well, you know, the crackdowns were police actions, and they really haven't spawned the same sort of international condemnation that Libya did, and there hasn't been a UN resolution yet, so we're not preparing military action just yet. It's very, very interesting to see where they're going from here. And, of course, the French President Sarkozy has been talking up the idea of using the Libya solution basically all over the entire planet.
Let's start with him, man. That's what I say. Starting to agree with those right-wing bumper stickers. First Iraq, then France. All right. Well, thanks, Jason. I appreciate it, man. Everybody look at news.antiwar.com for the best of Jason Ditz there.
Thanks for having me.